I'm going to whisper some things to you now about Crunch chocolate bars. Because apparently this whispering thing is a thing that makes you feel things. It's saying something crunchy is coming in the candy wrapper language. Imagine your tongue hiking up those crispy, rocky ridges. Now, drum roll, please.
Wow, that's good. Crunchy, munchy chocolate doesn't whisper.
Turn up the fun with Crunch.
Looking to refresh your closet, home, or beauty routine this spring? Walmart's got all the stylish goods in one stop. From chic new looks and the latest makeup to quality furniture and tableware. Go to walmart.com/nowtrending. That's walmart.com/nowtrending for the hottest fashion, home, and beauty finds. Your style at Walmart.
Well, you do that and I'll put us on YouTube while you do it.
1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2. It's recording now. 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2. That's it. Okay, it's recording now.
Welcome to Random Movie Generator Deep Dive, because we must be on holiday or something, or one of us is ill. But today, David. Sorry, I haven't said hello.
Thank you, sir. Not at all. Absolutely. You've got to set the scene like any good film.
Have you had your coffee? Yeah. I just had a coffee.
I've got a coffee next to me right here. Absolutely, in a flask, a pink flask. I enjoy having it in a flask because it keeps it hot. It's a bit of a life hack that I've come up with there.
I can only handle 2 coffees. Can you handle more?
I am a bit of a coffee addict, and I do try to keep it to 2 because the third one will love me and leave me, in the sense that I get a massive caffeine boost, but then it will really drop my energy. That's horrific. And then I'm just chasing the Nescafe dragon through the day. I'm trying to give myself little boosts. And it all goes very train spotting. It all goes wrong very quickly. So 2,
I feel disgusting after 1. No, I don't. I feel lovely. I feel disgusting after 2.
What sort of coffee do you have? Are you a latte man or just your classic?
Well, I got Nomi like a proper coffee machine with beans.
Oh, wow. Oh, not pods. It's like beans.
Oh, but that's a barista do. Like, Nomi's really into coffee, so she's very exact on the bean and the heat. And yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That's proper. So what do? You grind the beans up?
I grind the bean. Welcome, Stink Bits, Guy Anderson. Welcome. I grind the bean. So do that. Wow. I heat the milk, the oat milk.
Oh my lord, this is nothing like
mine. Oh, heat the milk and froth it up, and then I, do the old bean business into the cup, put the milk in. Bob's your uncle.
Flipping heck. I've got lots of those little mini plastic milks. I kind of collect them from cafes or
cinemas.
Yeah, like a rabbit sort of thing, those little kind of milk ones, because they're like the exact amount you need for coffee.
Do you steal?
Absolutely not. Not at all. There's no theft involved whatsoever. If I did, I'd go to the manager and say, listen.
Have you ever stolen a jacket?
A jacket? No, God, I wouldn't be that ambitious.
Do you know what? I haven't stolen anything. My nan had a sweet shop. She had a sweet shop, like a grocer.
A sweet shop?
Well, she had a sweet aisle in a corner shop. She had a corner shop.
Flying sauces, licorice, laces.
Yeah.
Fizzy coke.
It just suddenly dawned on me, my nan had a... Fucking hell, it's amazing.
And did she let you just go for it every now and then?
I don't know, I sort of no memory of going for it, but I do remember nicking a blackjack and feeling terrible.
Goodness me. Flipping it. So when you had that black tongue, you looked at it in the mirror and you just thought, yeah. What a simple child. Goodness me.
But you've
me.
Stolen 7 jackets, you said, in your lifetime.
absolutely in the same time. I just got one. It was so easy. I just went back in and thought, right, okay, I'll have a, this is for autumn. What am I going to have for winter? And just all seasons.
But you do nab milk.
Only, I've got to put myself on the book here in the sense that if I don't use it, I'll perhaps in my head think, well, I'll take two just in case. But in the back of my head, no, that second one will be ideal at home in the cupboard just to pop in some coffee.
Yeah.
Because it's the exact right amount. But it isn't purpose theftery type of thing. And you know, if I put it in my pocket, I'll do it in front of the cashier. So if they want to get their stun gun out or put me in a headlock and say, oi, sorry, sir, that's not for you to take. They can.
Oh, right. Okay. So it's not under the a cloak or anything.
It's not in my sock. Okay. Or like that.
Okay.
There's nothing untoward to the systems, I think.
Welcome, everybody, who's joined us on this Wednesday morning. Stinkbits, Guy Anderson, DJ Swad, Magic Ben, Gareth Davis, 925 Hit, Alec Gosher, and anyone else who's watching. We're doing a deep dive today, David, on which movie?
The 70s classic, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Actually, do you say movie or film?
I don't know. I don't go with either, really. I think I don't even know which one I go for. I say movie or film, really. A film's coming out, a movie's coming out. Sometimes I might even use the word epic if I'm impressed by it. That epic's coming out.
Would you?
Maybe not. I don't know. Maybe I should introduce that more to my sort of vocab. Is it epic?
Right.
It's an epic experience.
So One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I had it on VHS when I was really young, and I watched it so many times. I haven't seen it for years. When did it come out? Let me settle into my little cosy chair and listen to you.
Yeah, 1975, it came out. It's based on a famous novel by Ken Kesey and was directed by Milos Forman, who went on to do lots of big movies after that.
Like what?
She's insane. My head's just gone completely blank. I can't think of one. But he's a massive director. I mean, he did the Jim Carrey film, Man on the Moon. But he's done
He did. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Hair, Ragtime, Amadeus, Valmont, The People versus Larry Flint, Man on the Moon, Goya's Ghosts.
There we go. He's a well-renowned director. I mean, that was just a brain fart I had then. Do you know what I mean? I just couldn't think for a second what else he'd done. To the extent I didn't even bother writing it in my notes, he's just a very well-known director. You know, it's like saying what has Spielberg done. So yeah, he's a big deal, but this was his number one breakthrough film into Hollywood in a big way. And it's got an interesting background to it. If you want me to go into that now, it's up to you.
Oh, I don't
want
to go for it.
In the sense that Michael Douglas at that point was a TV star on a cop show, and it was a San Francisco based cop show. I can't remember the exact title to it, and which once again I should have looked up. I do apologize. He couldn't make his break into film because it's interesting, back then TV was the far more less glamorous sibling. So if you were in TV and you know, you were not seen as part of the Hollywood A-list in any way.
Do you know what, David? I saw Samuel L. Jackson do a TV advert yesterday, the other night, and I said, both me and Naomi went,
what was it for?
I don't know. I was just like, I want you to remain special and untouchable. I don't want you on my TV doing adverts.
Well, I think Tom Cruise and DiCaprio have done that, and it's definitely served them well in a massive way. They'll do commercials, but it'll be in Japan. Do you know what I mean? They certainly won't do it. It's like George Clooney started doing those coffee pod ads. But although, having said that, they did make the pods more alluring to me. And I'm constantly window shopping coffee pods, so I think it did cast a spell over me.
Did it?
But it does kind of definitely sort of some black marketing magic attacks me, but it does make them slightly less exclusive and untouchable.
I like my TV film stars to be exotic and from another planet.
Well, it's like when Demi Moore first dated Bruce Willis, they were saying that Bruce Willis at that point was on
Moonlighting.
Moonlighting, that's it, Moonlighting. And her agent said, it's not a good idea to date a TV star.
What?
I mean, a few years later, he was on Die Hard, you know, he's doing incredibly well. But TV back then was definitely a lesser
animal. Your agent telling you not to date someone.
I know. You want to focus on Hollywood stars, not a TV star. And all the people Bruce Willis hung out with were TV stars, like Woody Harrelson, Cheers, John Goodman, Roseanne. TV was seen very much as a lesser creature. But I've really gone off topic there.
Well, so have I, because my Amazon delivery just waved at me.
Wonderful stuff. Yeah. Do you know what it is in the box? Can you spy what it? Please do. Let's, you know, Santa Claus style. Let's check it out, Captain. Here we go. I can see your reflection in the mirror. Here we go. Nice large Amazon box. Here we go. Let's find out what's in there.
It's not for me.
Oh, what? There's nothing worse than that.
God.
Nothing worse.
What a damp squib. Anyway,
that's a damn squid.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. How many times had you seen it, David? You've seen it before?
Oh, gosh, yeah. I watched it for my A-levels, when I did film A-level. For some reason, I watched that, and I certainly enjoyed it. And I watched it another time at Christmas. It was on ITV2, one of their repeats over the Christmas period. So I don't know how many times I watched it. I think it's a good 5 or 6 times.
Yeah.
That I've kind of sat down and properly given it a watch. But Michael Douglas, he wanted to make the leap from TV into film. And he decided the best way to do that was to become a film producer. Produce a film and then cast himself. And he bought the rights to One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, the novel. So it's very much a Michael Douglas brainchild. But the thing is, the person who gave him the idea to buy the book was his father, Kirk, who played the main character on stage to ripping reviews. And
ripping reviews.
I know, actually, I don't know if ripping is the right word for it, but very positive, strong reviews, ripping review, ripping yarns. You've got a ripping yarn. I don't know if you can get a ripping review. I guess ripping like a car ripping down the street doesn't work. The metaphor doesn't work. We need to drop that hot potato.
Yeah.
And basically, Kirk Douglas wanted to appear in a film.
No, not gripping.
Gripping.
No, I don't know.
It would be enticing. Euphoric reviews.
Yeah.
Euphoric. It would have been a case of, so Kirk Douglas wanted to appear in the film version. His son had bought the rights. And Kirk was like, well, this is perfect, you know, let's go for it, let's collaborate. And Michael Douglas was, no, I don't think you're right for the role. And it shows how committed Michael Douglas was to his Hollywood career, to the extent that, you know, it's like, no, Dad, get out of the way. Even though you've given me this idea,
yeah,
I've taken it from you. And this is your, like, golden goods. I'm still not interested, full stop.
Rave reviews.
Rave reviews, not ripping, rave, like a 90s acid house rave. People high on ecstasy, wearing diapers. They used to dress up like children, didn't they, which was a bit crazy. But then it was a case of Michael Douglas. Well, it shows how a businessman he was, because he was primed and ready to appear in himself, because that was the whole idea. I'll produce it, but I'll be in it. It was almost like a Ben Affleck, Matt Damon, Good Will Hunting vibe. But then Jack Nicholson was interested, and he had to put his ego aside again and just say, no, Jack Nicholson is a far better actor. And also, Jack Nicholson had just done Chinatown at that point. So that was he was riding high, but also so it was a case of having a big movie star involved, but also you could see Jack Nicholson just being better in the role. Simple as that. So on the Douglas front, so Michael Douglas would have won an Oscar for that.
Well, maybe.
Maybe I think. Well, he got a best. No. He got the film won Best Picture.
Oh, when
so he would have gone up on stage and got an Oscar.
Okay. Oh, I see. Sorry. Yeah. Yeah.
So he would have been a producer. But you're right. Yeah. Maybe. You never know. Yeah. That was a bit like me sort of saying, "Oh no, would have won an Oscar."
Yeah. I just want to see 1937. So Jack Nicholson was 47, 57, 67, 77. Bloody hell. He was late, mid to late 30s. In One Flew Over the Cuckoo's. Shit.
Yeah, it took him a while, wasn't it? Because he spent his 20s, Jack Nicholson, appearing in low-budget Roger Corman films. And I think he was in his early 30s for Easy Rider, Raging Bull. He was quite mature for that. It was almost kind of Han Solo, Harrison Ford age.
Oh, God. I'm sorry, I'm just looking at images of Jack Nicholson in the movie. He just looks really cool.
Do you know what's really cool is that when he was nominated for a BAFTA, and this is worth checking out on YouTube, when he was nominated for a BAFTA for Chinatown, he did his acceptance speech. He actually won it, I should say. He did his acceptance speech on the set of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest because he was filming it at the time.
Have you seen that on YouTube or anything?
It is on YouTube. You can check it out on YouTube. And I think Danny DeVito appears briefly because Michael Douglas and Danny DeVito were roommates in Hollywood. And that's how Danny DeVito got the role. They were roommates in Hollywood for a long, long time. Because once again, they're all TV stars. He was in Taxi. Michael Douglas was in his San Francisco cop show. And the TV bunch very much...
I think it's called Streets of San Francisco.
It is. You are quite right, Captain. I should have looked that up myself. That's appalling research.
DDD, PPP. Actually, quick question for people watching. Is there anyone who hasn't seen One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest? And the second thing is DDD PPP says Nicholson didn't take a wage for the film. Instead, he took
a slice.
He took a percentage share.
Oh, well, he'd have done very well then. God, that's him going into Joker mode, isn't he? He's no fool.
No.
Because, I mean, it cost something like $4.5 million to make, and it made way over $100 million. So he'd have done incredibly well. But, I mean, his contract for the Joker was just incredible, wasn't it? He had it built into his contract that if there was a sequel to Batman, he would get a percentage of the box office. So he had nothing to do with Batman Returns, which ironically starred Danny DeVito, didn't it? We're back into DeVito territory. He had nothing to do with Batman Returns, but he got a plum sum of the actual box office.
Guy Anderson and Dan Crawford both say, "I haven't seen One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest."
Wowzers, you are in for a treat then, people. It's HBO quality prestige drama, proper up there. Je ne sais quoi.
Oh, it's got je ne sais quoi coming out of his asshole.
Written with lipstick, je ne sais quoi, on the side of the actual poster.
Yeah.
That makes sense. It's just an image that came to mind.
Sorry, I was just reading a question for someone in the YouTube, but it's not relevant to the... apologies, everyone. I shall cut that bit out of the pod.
Not at all.
So,
not at all.
Did you... You obviously sat down and watched it again, or did you not? Or?
Oh, yeah, God, yeah. Absolutely, okay. Sat down and watched it. It's all about having a new reaction and experience to the film at great
was it
movie.
As good, not as good, or better than you remembered?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'd say the third act was better than I remember. The third
What about
act,
the fiddly second act?
The fiddly second act. That's still good because they're at loggerheads, him and Nurse Ratchet.
Oh, there are just moments in the film where...
Yeah. Totally
this is
great,
a one-sitting.
Yeah, it is a one-sitting, 100%. The third act... there's nothing low with the second act because it's about escalating their relationship, him and Nurse Ratchet, and the third act though is like a masterclass in script writing. It really, really is. It's a domino effect, cause and effect, reveal.
Cars and effect.
I can imagine singing this on like 80s Top of the Pops. for some reason, I could imagine a bit like Wham, three smashing looking ladies that aren't being, you know, used for their sexuality. They'll have the same amount
of... sing. They can sing.
They can sing and they can dance. And you and me will be wearing matching shell suits. Cause and effect. Cause and effect.
Reveal.
And then maybe with the reveal, we'd do like a Bucks Fizz with the skirts. You can't do that now, can you?
Jeff Dale just says, man, that's catchy. Cause and effect.
Oh, wow.
Cause and effect.
Cause and
reveal,
effect.
Reveal.
Cause and effect, reveal. If we ever did like a script writing podcast, that maybe would be our theme tune, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. It's a thought. Food for thought.
It's good to have thoughts, isn't it? It keeps you going.
So,
keeps your projection.
Can you tell... Oh, I guess Guy and... was it Dan said they haven't watched the film? We're going to have to talk about...
Well, I can just give like a vague framework. Well, it'd be a shame not to talk about
89
years.
Jesus.
I know. When is something not a spoiler? Do you know what I mean?
Well,
it's time to reveal.
Yeah, go on then. What's it about, David?
Basically, Jack Nicholson is a... they don't say exactly why, but he's broken the law somehow. And he's going to be given farming duties in a farm prison. And he doesn't fancy the idea of that, understandably, you know, picking corn and raking allotments or whatever they get up to in prison gardens. And so he pretends to be mad, completely insane. So instead he can spend his time in a mental home, which will be a lot more, in his mind, luxurious than having to actually be in a prison setting, working on a farm. I guess there's no manual work involved. It's more of a case of just, you know, opiates, painkillers, and just, you know, chilling on your behind type of thing.
Opiates?
That's what he thinks. Opiates, not opiums, opiates. What are they called? Falcon, what are those particular ones called? Opiates, and they're very mental homes, have them not. It's called, I keep thinking the word Viking, Valcom, Vacarine or something. I can't remember. It's a well-known opiate drug. It begins with a V.
Valium?
But, I mean, it's not Valium, it's something else. Apparently Matthew Perry was taking 55 a day on the set of Friends. And it's very much the go-to drug.
Why did that make me laugh? I don't know, it's just
well,
the 55's exact number.
A lot, isn't
bang.
It?
Every day. Just the exact number made me laugh.
55. Because when you see... Matthew Perry on Friends, when he's lost loads of weight, that means he's on painkillers.
Oh.
When he's on a lot of weight, he's back on the old pub and sauce. He's back drinking alcohol.
Vicodin?
Vicodin, yes, I believe that is it. There is Vicodin. And so Jack Nicholson enters the actual mental home. They let him stay because they think he's insane. But then he starts to have a toxic relationship with the nurse, the head nurse of the mental home called Nurse Ratchet, and he believes that she's controlling them too much. She's a dictator, a bit of a fascist, and he thinks that these people that he starts bonding with, the mental home patients, need to live a little, enjoy their life, watch a baseball game on TV, have the odd outing. And she feels as though she's like something from a horror, isn't she? Yes. Having said that, though, it's got to be said, watching it again with new eyes, when you in the first act of the film, she's a bit more human than I remember. She's just very corporate. She's very passionate about her job. She says hello to all the staff. She's a bit more three-dimensional. She's not Darth Vader. Darth Vader, let's use his name correctly.
Right, that's interesting. Okay.
Yeah, there's a bit more of a human aspect to her. But then when her ego is bruised more and more by Nicholson, it becomes more petty and more vicious. And then she becomes more unlikable. I mean, don't get me wrong, at the beginning, you wouldn't want to invite her to your bar mitzvah or your party or whatever. She seems a real bore. But she's not immediately Godzilla. But there's an amazing scene where you know he's crossed the line, where there's some kind of scuffle that he's involved with, and her nurse hat is knocked off her head. And she has to pick it up. And it's very well performed. She really looks incredibly crestfallen that her outfit's been knocked off and she has to, like, you know, rearrange her hair and put it back on. And you can tell that that's perhaps the worst thing that's happened to her than any of the actual proper medical insurance-based rule-breaking that he does. And also, when you look at Jack Nicholson's character at times, he does seem like a kind of just unruly teenager. When I look at it again with from more mature eyes.
You're on Nurse Ratched's side, aren't you?
Not so much on her side, but definitely kind of a bit more empathetic towards her at the beginning. And he just seems like
he's a naughty boy.
A child in a class. He's just a naughty boy. He's not the core rebel that I remember just immediately empathising with at the beginning. It's more like you just want to create chaos for the sake of it, mate. You're bored.
Right.
Maybe you should have been working on the farm. Right. At least it keeps you in trouble.
Right, okay.
You've potentially got a good thing here, but you can't help yourself.
Yeah. Okay.
But then as the narrative develops, you know, and she just becomes...
Fucking hell, I just remember what happens at the end.
Oh, yeah, there's lots that happened. Honestly,
oh my
there's
God.
Lots of moments in the end where you think, well, that would be a satisfying ending. That would be a satisfying end. No, more. And it pays things off from the beginning. It's not just over-the-top elaborate twists that you just think, well, if a UFO landed in the garden now, they wouldn't see that happening. You know, it's not over-the-top. It's like... is baked into the script dramatically. It makes sense to the psychology of the characters. It's there's lots going on there. Very, very impressive. Really, I'd say it's
remembering a little bit the Native American who twist with him, a little twist.
And before that happens, I'd say there's even bigger twists, because also there's the other guy who's got the stutter, and she knows his mother. Nurse Ratched knows his mother and constantly uses that. Well, you can do that if you want, but
could you do your Nurse Ratched impression? Because I know you do it at parties.
Oh, absolutely.
Like you do, and you actually do this too much at parties, but...
I just get, if I've had one too many tequila, I just go Ratched and okay. I just sort of go into the...
So this is David's famous Nurse Ratched impression.
So I'd walk through the party like I'm walking through the hospital. Morning, people. Morning. Why hasn't bed 5 been made? If we could do that straight away. Thank you very much. Thank you for that. Morning. Have the drugs been properly laid out alphabetically? Yes, morning. Morning, Suzanne. Morning.
How do people feel when you do this at like house parties?
If they don't know it's one flew of the cuckoo's nest, they wonder why I'm referring to morning because it's in the evening. And I think they think that, you know, perhaps I'm being seduced by some kind of illegal drug in my brain box type of thing. I've slipped a few yellow pills with a smiled face on, but it's not at all. I'm just referencing a film, simple as. A classic piece of 70s Americana.
Yeah, you bloody nail it when you do it, though. So if you do know the movie and you are at the house party, you're going to go, fucking hell, he's doing Nurse Ratched.
Absolutely. That first famous scene where we're introduced to the character, I try to create it as immersive as possible.
Yeah. So, I'm just trying to think. We got to talk about this, but sorry, everyone. I don't want to ruin it for anyone, but obviously it's been out 85 years. So, let's just tell us about the twists in the movie.
The twists in the movie, you have... Jack Nicholson does the... Oh, there's an amazing... Jack Nicholson has managed to get keys and he's going to escape from the mental home. But before he goes, he wants to show people a very good time. And he invites his two lady friends into the actual mental home for a party.
Are they sex workers?
They have plenty to drink. They are sex workers. Well, you get the idea that they are. Because one of them, he arranges for... the younger chap who's like in his 20s with a stutter.
Billy,
that is it. Yeah. And Ratched knows Billy's mother.
Oh, God.
She arranges for him to lose his virginity. And once they lose their virginity, he and the American Native Indian are then going to leave the mental home. Simple as that. And he says to the American Indian, it won't take long, don't worry, type of thing, you know, but it'd be a nice little au revoir for him to pop his cherry, so to speak. And there's an amazing piece of acting where the camera just lingers on Jack Nicholson's face as he takes a seat, waiting for this virginity activity to become to an end.
Activity?
See, you're like, what is a PE lesson?
And then virginity activity took
me. So he suddenly came in, took you out.
Yeah.
And
so he's just waiting outside the room, is he, for it?
Yeah, and he's just sat there, and the camera just lingers on him, and he gets heavy eyes, and he slowly falls asleep. And then he wakes up and it is the next morning. And obviously the next staff are turning up and they're opening up, and he's potentially lost his opportunity to leave
escape,
the mental home.
Escape.
So you've got that as a massive twist. Then they're looking around confused, the mental home team, like, well, what's going on here? Because everyone's drunk. They've been drinking alcohol. And when this is happening...
How far into the movie is that party?
This is the third act. It's right at the end. Right at the end. And then Jack Nicholson tries to unlock the key. A nurse tries to stop him. He slams him in the jaw. And then someone else stops him. But then Nurse Ratchet finds Billy and the sex worker asleep in his mental home room. And Ratchet says she's going to tell his mother.
I just remember what happens to Billy now.
Yeah. Billy commits suicide, sadly. And massive revelation there.
Oh my God.
Massive revelation. Then.
Oh my God.
You've got an amazing piece of acting. The camera just lingers once again. There's no editing by Milos Forman, where Nicholson then tries to strangle Nurse Ratchet. And it looks very, very real. It's like you're watching a potential snuff movie.
Fuck.
Simple as that.
There's so many bits that keep coming back to me.
And then, so you've got that. You've got committed to, imagine watching that in cinema. You know, he wakes up. He's overslept his opportunity to leave the mental home. She turns up, finds Billy in bed. He commits suicide. Nicholson then tries to strangle Ratchet. Then Nicholson is tied up on a bed and is taken to frontal lobe electrotherapy. And then
so when he comes in and pretends he sort of stumbles into the room and pretends he's...
Yes, that's it. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, definitely. And then... the native Indian finds him completely lost. He's had another bout of electrotherapy. And, you know, they've completely erased his personality. He's gone. And then the Native American Indian suffocates him with a pillow and then takes a water fountain, I think, doesn't he? Smashes through the window and runs off into the hills. I mean, holy shit. I mean, that's done in 15, 20 minutes. And it's like, you know, a domino cause and effect element, like we said earlier.
Cause and effect. Cause and effect.
Cause and effect.
Reveal.
What you tell me now? Cause and effect.
Cause and effect.
Cause and effect.
Cause and effect.
Reveal.
One more time,
Bob. Cause and effect.
Cause and effect.
Reveal. Give me some. Give me an Oscar, son.
Always trying to catch up.
Trying to catch up with it. Trying to keep in rhythm.
Oh, I just want to watch it. Do you know what? I'm going to ask Naomi if she's seen One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I want to watch it.
But it's a complete masterclass in the third act ending. Set up, complete. And everything's been carefully set up in the background all the time. And it's the Native American who finally leaves and has the strength to move on. Also, the other thing is watching a game with older eyes, you understand the political commentary in the film more, that it's all about individuality being taken away by the system, and the idea that, you know,
and he's got like the best character, isn't he? What's his name? Not Jim Redford. Jack Nicholson. He's just got
Jack Nicholson.
He's so sort of lovable rogue and just so entertaining.
Massively.
And by the end of the movie, gone.
Oh, 100% gone. Yeah, he's just been completely. So she's committed murder in a way, and at that point, there's no empathy towards Ratchet. She's, you know, an evil creature.
You still fancy her?
Well, why not? She is quite a looker. She ain't bad on the eye, without sounding too chauvinistic and objectifying women. But she,
you're allowed to find someone attractive.
Absolutely.
Have we got to that stage now? You can't find someone attractive.
You can definitely. She'd be a nightmare at home. Jimmy, you wouldn't be able to live with her.
I can't say that.
That's quite right. Absolutely. I think she'd be a woman who would leave hair, you know, bits of hair on doors, knowing that you'd open cupboards and. You would take an old
spider. What, hair on doors?
Yeah, Connery did it in Doctor No, where you take a single hair, you lick it, and then you put it on the door or something that shouldn't be open by anyone else, and then you check if that hair's still there. That's what Bond does in Doctor No, when he first enters a Jamaican hotel room. Absolutely. You still got hair, you better use it, sir, and you lick it all over the place. Yeah, it's a poor man's surveillance system. Who needs an Amazon camera phone, camera bell in your front yard?
Who needs an Amazon got plenty of camera hair? Bell?
Camera bell. Indeed, camera bell, that's the one.
Oh, this movie.
It's a masterclass, it really is.
We're talking one sitting, aren't we?
Oh yeah, 100%.
I mean, if this isn't a one sitting, Jesus Christ.
Also, the other thing that's really interesting is that there's some great cutaway shots every now and then of the actual mental home of, I don't know, Danny DeVito playing poker or Christopher Lloyd shuffling around, so you get like cutaways of what they're all up to. And they look very naturalistic because their rehearsal footage, in actual fact, Milos Forman just wanted them to be their characters for a day.
Really?
And he actually used that rehearsal footage in the end as cutaways. But also, there's another interesting story. Milos Forman never shows early footage to the cast because he feels though they get into their heads too much. And the whole cast started to lose faith in the film. And they started to lose faith with Milos Forman because it was his first big Hollywood film. So he had to show them footage early because he had a bit of a mutiny on his hands. And when they saw what he was doing... Yeah, he did, definitely. They got some more, you know, they had faith in him. But it was a bit of a rocky...
Danny DeVito's character. He's so good, isn't he? He's just sort of...
Oh, it's Martini, isn't it? Yeah, it's incredible performance. Yes, yeah, it's incredible. Really. And Christopher Lloyd's really good in it as well.
Isn't there a guy, when they're having a party, does a little dance on his own? Like an old
yes.
guy?
Yes, yeah, yeah, definitely. Like room dancing, like something like The Shining.
Yeah, exactly. Type of thing. Someone said in the chat, can you talk about the football game?
Oh, God, yeah. They turn the TV off, don't they? And then Jack Nicholson, through the power of imagination, still pretends it's on. And that winds up Ratchet 100%. Because she's like, even though I've turned the TV off, she's still rallying. Yeah, so they're still excited, shouting, screaming. And, turns it off early type of thing. So before the game comes to an end. And that is, it's a classic scene, definitely. It's almost a bit too Hollywood, that moment, in a way. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you know, the individual's imagination can break the system to a certain degree. I enjoyed it, certainly, but it's definitely a 1970s nihilistic kind of movie, isn't it, in the sense of the system will chew you up at some point. Interestingly, they did not a sequel, but they did something, a Michael Keaton film where Christopher Lloyd appears and it's in a mental home and they have an outing, a day outing. And there's lots of references to One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest in that movie.
What's that? What film's that?
I think it's called Dream Team. I could be completely wrong, and it's a far more Hollywood-fied, more comedic take. But
Dream Team.
Michael Keaton's in it. Yeah. And Mike Keaton has a Nicholson-esque element about him, type of thing, that madness quality. And Christopher Lloyd plays a character that's almost a more mature, older version of his character in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. But it's certainly not an official sequel.
Jeff Dale says on YouTube, the football scene is such a great scene. Stop being a party pooper, Edwards.
Quite right. Stop being a ratchet about it, mate.
Yeah, you are the ratchet of the movie review scene.
I really am. It has to be said.
Yeah. Am I the Jack Nicholson?
That's the plan. Absolutely. You know, it's with any Haribo's sweet snack, you need the sour and the sweet, don't you? That metaphor's terrible, but no, yeah, there okay. you go. Good cop, bad cop.
Anything else you want to say about One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest? Have you got any nuggets that might be information nuggets?
Oh yeah, God, yeah, lots of information.
You got any facts that might blow our nut?
Okay, this blow both my nuts. I'm a eunuch. I'd left a eunuch after this. I was completely kind of castrated in shock. Basically, to promote the film in 74, Time magazine researcher interviewed Jack Nicholson on the phone to promote the movie. And she said to him, you know, like any celebrity interviewer, they do research into their past. And he was asking about his past before being famous. And she said to him, this researcher, do you realize that your sister June is actually your mother? And he was completely shocked and confused. And at that point, his sister passed away. So he couldn't talk to his sister. But then he got actual private detectives to look into it. And it turns out that, yes, his sister, June, was actually his mother. And
Hang on a minute. His sister, June, was his mother.
Yes. Well, who he thought was his mother. Sorry, who he thought was his sister growing up was really his mother. In the sense that it would have been inappropriate that his sister was pregnant during that period and they wanted to keep it a secret.
Wow, I'm so confused. You've absolutely chopped my testes off with that.
And also, apparently, his other sister was actually his aunt. Well, that would be the case, wouldn't it? That would be the
case. I just wanted you to say Danny DeVito had size 14 shoes.
No, it's a big old, it's a big situation. So I'm guessing his, who he thought his mother was his grandmother.
So that would be like me doing a, like promoting something that I've done recently and the journalist saying, do you know that your sister is your mother?
Yes.
I'd go,
and she passed away.
No, I wouldn't. I'd go, what? What are you talking about?
She died in 63. Yeah. Oh, no. His grandmother, who's his mother, died in 63. And his sister, who was his biological mother, died in 1970. So they weren't around to...
What's it got to do with the old journalist?
Well, do you know what I mean? That's what happens. You've got a bit of garbage. It's time to share it and see what his reaction is. But yeah, that was a massive shocker. Any other little factoids I've got...
Where was it filmed, David?
I don't know exactly. So I should have found out the exact place. Please do.
I've never looked.
Oh, total Oscars. The film was nominated for 9 and won 5. It basically won the big 5. So supporting actor, best cinematographer, best picture, best director, and best actor, and best adapted screenplay. So all the key ones, it actually won. And its budget was $4.4 million, but it went on to make $108 million.
It was shot in a wing of the Oregon State Mental Hospital between the 24th and the 25th Street.
Gosh.
The condition of filming at the hospital was that the period not be updated from the original 1963. The wing used J Building has since been demolished.
What a night. You could tell that it was a real location. You can definitely tell that wasn't an actual set.
I hate it when they demolish filming locations. I hate it so much. I hate it.
Oh, incredibly so. Well, it's like I saw a film location, location scouting video of the mansion for Batman that Christian Bale uses, and that's completely derelict, and people break into it. And it's slowly just crumpling away. But you can still see parts of the, even though it's crumpling away, you can still see parts of it. You think, oh yeah, okay, they filmed in the mansion. I remember there was a scene with Michael Caine there. But there's no attempt to actually, look after it or anything like that. It's just slowly kind of, I think the only thing you could do with it now is just knock it down. But it's quite surprising, really. I thought people would pay good money to wander around a Batman, Bruce Wayne mansion. Ironically.
Sorry, Dave, I'm just looking at filming locations of it's all the boating trip.
Yeah, I was about to say the boating trip's a big, big one when they go on an actual outing, a day out. That would have been big. But than that, the whole thing is in the mental home, isn't it? There's the basketball scene when they go outside, so I'm imagining that's probably, and they get the Native American to chuck the ball into the hoop every time.
DDD PPP says it's Obama's favourite movie.
Really? Well, it's definitely got his kind of like political agenda attached to it, isn't it? The rise of the individual, not being sucked in by the sort of fascist system.
It was nearly Marlon Brando as McMurphy and Shelley Devours Candy. Would have been a completely different film, that.
That would have been a massively completely different film. I think during that period, though, Marlon Brando was almost down for every single movie. There was something I heard recently that, Lolita, he was down for Marlon Brando. It's like Marlon Brando was almost down for everything at one point. I think he had a meeting for every single role.
Apparently, many of the extras were authentic mental patients.
Gosh, I didn't know that. That is, that almost like could be a bit of a health and safety nightmare, couldn't it? I don't know if that's clever or a bit ridiculous. Because, I mean, I thought Danny DeVito and Christopher Lloyd did a perfectly good job. I didn't need anyone in the background to add to any kind of, bigger sense of reality.
Well, David, now's your time to review. Give One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. How many choc ices are you going to give One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest? If that makes any sense. Everybody in the chat, if you could guess how many choc ices David is going to give One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, I will have a guess myself. Please put your guesses into the chat. Here we go. I've just got a pen out, just writing down how many choc ices out of five I think David is going to give One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Okay, people are putting their guesses in. I'm going to put mine in. David, how many choc ices out of five are you going to give One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest?
Without a doubt, five choc ices are coming out of the freezer. Absolutely. And also, God, it's not like there's a lot of films I look back on and you just think, God, that's like I saw Gremlins recently, and it's good in places, there's great set pieces, but you think, God, there's some, you know, there's not great moments here. And I'm a massive Indiana Jones fan, and I go back and watch some of those, and I think, God, the second act's not brilliantly paced. But you can see why One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest is a classic. I mean, you know, the story, the script.
How can it be anything but? How can it be anything but?
So I watched it with new eyes. And if I saw that in the cinema today at Cineworld, you know, I went to, and I'd be impressed. You know, it's like Back to the Future. You know, I can watch that without any nostalgia whatsoever and just watch it as a piece of storytelling. And I mean, God, if you want to sing the cause and effect reveal song to anything, it is Back to the Future. And, you know, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, definitely. It's got everything. It's got really good acting, but also a really well-constructed script for a sort of modern audience as well. You know, it's kind of, it's not pretentious. It's not up itself a bit. You know what I mean? It's like, I saw the Scorsese film recently, Killer of the Flower Moon, and it's got many good elements, but God, it's long, and in places it's really slow. And One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest shows that you can have that contemporary, modern, crowd-pleasing plot, pace, zigzag, but at the same time it can be acting and character study to a high level. Do you know what I mean? It can have that European cinema vibe of character focus but still have that Hollywood element at the same time.
Well, I'm just going to go into the YouTube, the comment chat, see what people guessed. DDDPBB said it's a whopping 5. Liam Diamond thought you'd come up with 4.5. DJ Swad 5, KB 5, Richard Bayliss 4.5. Alex Gosher and Sal Willis both said 5, as did Stink Bits. Trickster came in with a 4.5. Guy Anson, 5. Dan Coleshill Jones, 4.5. Jeff Dale says 5. And Nick Blumfield said 5. Simple as that. It's a 5. If this
it's
isn't a
5. Let's just do it. Absolutely. 24/7.
David, thank you. I'm definitely going to watch it again. I just forgot. So I've watched it so many times. And I'd forgotten so many bits, and then I was like, oh, yeah, yeah.
It'll definitely be a good one for you and your writing. I think, you know, structure and pace and things like that.
What the fuck's that mean?
Oh, you know, you enjoy, you know, you're a writer type of...
no, yeah.
God, I wondered if I'd done that, so what are you talking about?
Yeah, Oh God,
you'll definitely like that with the old pacing and structure and stuff like that. It's just it really is a masterclass of the third act. And as you say, it's not in any way baggy in the second act because their relationship's gearing up, type of thing. It's almost sort of Tom and Jerry type of vibe. Do you know what I mean? These two people just rubbing each other the wrong way.
DJ Swad said, "You cheeky sod."
Well said. Absolutely. I think I had to cross that.
It'd be really good for your writing, you know, the pacing and the.
Oh dear me! I could just see some improvements that you might.
Listen,
you know,
I'm trying my best, David. So you can do.
100%, absolutely. I'm a fan of that best. So it goes without saying. So it wasn't in any way patronising whatsoever.
Now, someone said in the chat, they recommended, they offered up another deep dive. Normally, it's a deep dive from me that I really care about, so that I want to see what David thinks. But
absolutely,
the recommendation here, I thought, yeah, I'd like a bit of that. Can we do The Shining next?
Oh, gosh, yeah, definitely The Shining. That'd be absolutely superb. Do you know what? I could be wrong about this. And once again, very unprofessional. I should have looked this up. But am I right in thinking, you know, in The Shining, chap who comes back to the hotel because he also has The Shining, and Jack Nicholson puts an axe into his stomach. He's a well-known actor, African-American chap. And he comes back, you see him on the plane, he makes a massive journey all the way back to the hotel, and then he turns up and he hasn't even wiped his feet, and he gets an axe in the belly. Is he also in One Flew of the Cuckoo's Nest?
I've only seen The Shining once, so I don't...
Oh God, you're in for a treat if you've only seen it once, blimmin' heck. I think it's the same actor, and I think it's the actor who gets drunk with him during the party, and lets in the ladies of the night, which Billy, you know, has his cherry exploded by.
Is there an old lady in a bath in The Shining?
Oh, 100% there is. Well, she's very alluring at the beginning, isn't she? She's like
Scatman Crothers.
That is it. Scatman Crothers. Is he in both of them?
Ah, Scatman Crothers. Him, yeah.
I've seen two interviews with him where he can't talk about Jack Nicholson without breaking into tears. Proper tears. He's just so excited to work with him.
Oh, really?
Literally in tears. But yeah, the bath scene's amazing because she's an absolute...
bitch.
She's hot stuff, the lady in the bath right at the beginning. And then he goes in for an embrace and a naughty kiss. And then he pulls back, thinking, you know, this is just delicious. And then she's like a nasty hag. He just manically keeps laughing at him.
She's a nasty hag.
Yeah. And it's quite a... have you ever watched the making of The Shining?
I think I have.
That's by Vivian Kubrick, isn't it? Stanley Kubrick's daughter. And that's amazing.
Well, let's go into The Shining on another episode. But for now, we need to close the door on the deep dive vault. Which is lovely.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for that, David, the one for Flew Over the Cuckoos. I loved that.
No, I enjoyed going for it with you, sir. Going for it with you.
Thank you, everyone, for watching live. The Trickster, DDD, Jeff Dale, everybody, Dan, everybody else. DDD PPB says Room 237 is a good documentary about The Shining, but we...
Oh, there is. That's a really good one.
But we won't talk about The Shining. No,
we will not talk about The Shining, but that's definitely one that we need to watch alongside The Shining, definitely, because that's fascinating, that one. Have you seen it, 237?
No, I don't think so.
You would like it. It's conspiratorial. It's the idea of Kubrick, you know, embedding the film with lots of messages and things in that vein.
Okay.
Because people have watched it so many times.
Let's save it for the show.
Absolutely.
Let's just keep this episode nice and tidy.
You're not Jack Nicholson if you want electrotherapy, mate, because you're not going to keep in step with the rest. Well, that's what's going to happen, Edwards. Rightly so. And I put the electrodes on my own temple.
We've just given a little taster of The Shining.
Absolutely. Don't start the mill already. We've already had one mill. You've been greedy, Edwards.
Thank you very much, Guy Anderson. Thank you for this midweek treat. Thank you, everyone. Enjoy your working days. And I'll see you on Friday, David.
looking forward to it, sir. Looking forward to it. Have a lovely day, and I'll see you in 2 sleeps time.